There has never been a vegetable with a more unfair reputation than that of the humble tomato. Mostly, it wasn't even its own fault, other than it being related to some other plants with some rather nasty side effects. And as the old saying goes, show me who your friends are, and I'll tell you who you are. So it seems it was being painted with the same brush as its delinquent relatives. So I guess technically the saying should really rather be that you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. In which case, our hero, the tomato, was somewhat shortchanged from the start. Welcome to the Fantastic History of Food. Strange but true stories from history that in some way involve food. I'm your host, Nick Charlie Key. This episode is brought to you by RoastersMarketplace.com. Roasters Marketplace curates small batch specialty coffee from 29 different micro roasters around the United States. Not only can you shop an amazing selection of single origin beans, but you can find out the story behind each and every craftsman. They even have their own podcast, so you can meet your coffee roaster. RoastersMarketplace.com is not your typical coffee website. You can shop by origin, roast level, processing method, even by flavor notes. So whether you're looking for a delicious light roast that has hints of blueberry and almonds, or a bold dark roast with qualities of dark chocolate and molasses, Roasters Marketplace can help you on the quest to find the perfect cup. You can also become a Roasters Marketplace member and get free shipping on every order, including a great selection of subscriptions, so you'll never be without a cup of the good stuff. RoastersMarketplace.com is a veteran-owned business run by a great guy called Chris. I've had the pleasure of getting to know him and his vision for the coffee market, and I honestly can't recommend them highly enough. You can connect with Chris over at RoastersMarketplace.com or on social media. Tomatoes are probably one of the most universally known and loved vegetables on the planet. They're just so versatile, and they form the basis of so many of the world's greatest dishes. Except they aren't actually vegetables at all. They're technically a fruit, which I find personally rather amusing, but in a frustrating kind of way. I'm sure we all know the saying by Miles Kingston that says, "Knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting that tomato in a fruit salad." But in an even more shocking turn of events, it turns out that tomato is in fact a vegetable. Well, at least it's been classified that way since 1893, when it was decided by the United States Supreme Court in order to help clarify customs and import taxes. So, at the end of the day, I think we can all agree that whatever it is, at least they're not dangerous. Or are they? To understand why, we have to go back all the way to the 1300s. We find ourselves in Europe, and at this time, one of the first of many witchcraft panics was sweeping the continent and would end up lasting for almost 400 years. Thousands of innocent women were executed during this time for the crime of practicing witchcraft. And I really do mean thousands. An incredibly conservative estimate by Dr. Ronald Hutton puts the number somewhere between 35 and 64,000. With at least 17,000 of those happening in Germany alone. A different researcher, this time a sociologist named Nachman Ben Yehuda, estimates that the total death toll could even have been as high as 500,000. This was a serious problem, and women in particular would do anything they could to avoid being accused of being a witch. Punishment was brutal. Women were burned at the stake, drowned, hanged, and even crushed by large stones after what really amounted to trial by kangaroo court. As it happens, the tomato first reached European shores in the 1500s and immediately found itself at the center of this continent-wide witch craze. It just so happened that at this very time, the theory that witches could fly and would use their broomsticks to do so was just, excuse the pun, taking off. The men assigned by the state as official witch hunters were hard at work trying to discover just what it was that gave these witches this ability to fly. As best they could ascertain, the witches were creating some form of concoction an ointment of sorts that they would smear all over their broomsticks and or themselves to enable them to go whizzing through the night sky. The witch hunters were also fairly certain that this same ointment gave these evil crones the ability to transform themselves into other animals, specifically they suspected into werewolves. One of the more prolific witch hunters, a man by the name of Henry Boguet, believed that witches chose werewolves in particular so that they could stalk the night attacking young children. For some reason, he seemed to think that they would only attack these children on their left sides, an oddly specific note with no real reason as to why he hypothesized this. He also believed that when a farmer's crops began to wither and die, it was a sign that these witch wolves, as I'm calling them now, had been running through the farmer's fields, their dark energy making the plants curl up in fright. Here's where our poor friend the tomato gets caught up in all of this unnecessary vegetable victimization. In 1545, the physician to the Catholic Pope was a man by the name of Andres Laguna. He recorded in his writings that he believed this witch ointment to consist of hemlock, nightshade, henbane, and mandrake. The last three of those ingredients just happened to be very close botanical relatives to the humble tomato. In fact, it's not just that they were related, but even to the untrained eye, tomato plants are practically identical to that of deadly nightshade. And when it comes to the fruit of the mandrake, it's almost impossible to tell them apart from little yellow cherry tomatoes. The major difference being that, when consumed, the mandrake fruit causes powerful hallucinations. All of this to say that tomatoes arrived in Europe like an out-of-towner stumbling into an Old West saloon. The piano player stopped playing, the card game fell silent, and everyone immediately eyed it with suspicion. To some people of the age, if you ate a tomato, you ran the risk of becoming a werewolf or being branded a witch. And unless you're an extreme thrill seeker, I'd be leaving tomatoes out of any and all of my salads. The Spanish Inquisition, however, had declared belief in witchcraft to be heretical. And so, accusing someone of being a witch meant you must believe that witchcraft is real, and therefore you are the one locked up as a heretic. In Spain, you could eat as many tomatoes as you liked, and no one was going to accuse you of anything. I like to think that, even though the festival only started in 1945, this was the spiritual origin story of La Tomatina, the annual tomato-throwing festival in a small town in eastern Spain. The entire premise of the festival is one giant tomato food fight, with thousands of people lining the streets to pelt each other with tomatoes until fire trucks come past and hose them down. In 2015 alone, over 145,000 kilograms of tomatoes were thrown, smeared, and crushed underfoot. The thought of this many tomatoes in one place, however, would have given the European witch hunters nightmares for the rest of their lives. It wasn't just the people who believed in the occult who found the tomato to be somewhat perplexing, however. Even the scientists of the day who clung tightly to the writings and understandings of the ancient Roman physician Galen found themselves at a loss as to how to categorize this new plant. Galen had set up a framework into which all plants had been categorized. So when new plants arrived in Europe that hadn't been described by Galen, mild panic set in at the thought that the ancient peoples maybe hadn't known everything. Naturalists and botanists scrambled to figure out how to say these new plants were actually nothing more than hybrids of the old plants in their existing frameworks. New things were scary and confusing, and to be avoided at all costs. You would think that with their wealth of knowledge and the clear similarity to the already existing nightshade, that maybe tomatoes wouldn't have to go through this whole procedure unnecessarily. But, as history loves to show us again and again, you'd very much be wrong. Galen did refer to some plants by name, but which the modern day people had no idea which plants he was exactly referring to. One of these named plants that was still unassigned translates from ancient Greek into Lycopersion, but was accidentally mistranslated as Lycopersicon, which in English translates to wolf peach. This plant was described as a poisonous Egyptian plant with strong-smelling yellow juice and a celery-like stalk. And to me, this doesn't sound anything like a tomato, but to the witch finders who believed witches could turn themselves into werewolves, the idea of a poisonous wolf peach sounded very much like this newfangled tomato. Not everyone was on board with this notion, especially the seed traders themselves, who argued that it couldn't have come from both ancient Egypt, as the botanists claim, as well as Peru, where the seed traders knew for a fact that it came from. By this stage, the name tomato hadn't made its way into our vocabulary, and so was open to multiple interpretations. They bore many names, including golden apples, Peruvian apples, love apples, and of course, wolf peaches. Hey everyone, it's Nick. I wanted to tell you about something I'm really excited about. I've just launched my online store with pins, stickers, and notebooks that are perfect for keeping your recipes in. But I also want to tie this in as a special bonus offer for my Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show each month on Patreon, I'll be including some free merch for two of the different tiers. If you sign up for the $5 a month tier, over and above the rewards you already get, I'll be giving each one of you a free sticker or pin of your choice. Then we have the mega supporter tier for my legendary patrons at the $20 tier, who will get two pins and two stickers of their choice, or one of my notebooks, if that's your preference. The link to my Patreon is in the show notes and on my website, foodhistorypodcast.com. Thank you so much to all of my recent patrons, including Caleb McKellar, Robert Olivieri, Nikki Chen, Dane Gerrits, Kelly Henry, Aziz Borished, The Waffle, and Matt Atienza. I couldn't do this without your support. But now, back to the show. From this point, tomatoes went through a generations-long persecution in England, France, and the New World. Louis XIV's royal botanist declared that it was in fact Galen's missing wolf's peach, and to get around the lack of actual similarities to the description, named it the red wolf's peach without ribs. At this point, anything can be anything as long as you give it a descriptive enough name. From there, James I's apothecary John Parkinson believed that people in the warmer climates of Spain, Italy, and the Caribbean could eat tomatoes without problems, as it was said to cool down hot stomachs. England, on the other hand, was plenty cool enough already, thank you, and this would only lead to people catching colds, as their temperatures would inevitably plummet after eating this wicked fruit. In 1597, famous English barber/surgeon, because those two professions are so incredibly similar, went as far as to say that tomatoes were, in his clearly professional opinion, corrupt, rank, and stinking. Much of the English population agreed, as did their descendants in Britain and the American colonies. In their minds, tomatoes were pretty to look at, but disgusting to eat, and also potentially satanic, depending on who you spoke to. Even up until the 1850s, people were still virulently anti-tomato. A Harvard-trained doctor by the name of D.O. Lewis spent that decade lecturing as a doctor that eating too many tomatoes would cause your gums to bleed and also somehow give you hemorrhoids. There are so many stories from history, most of them already roundly debunked, that involve the humble tomato at the center of a tragic event. Apparently, it was the acidity in tomatoes that caused lead to leach out of the 16th century aristocrats' pewter dining plates, and this lead would be consumed along with the tomato, eventually driving the aristocrats to madness from lead poisoning. Another story tells of a Colonel Robert Gibbon Johnson, who sat on the steps of the Salem County Courthouse, seemingly in the act of committing suicide. He knew better though and caused many women to faint as they watched him consume an entire basket of tomatoes while a band played a funeral march for him. Incredibly, and to us unsurprisingly, he lived to tell the tale. There is one more incredible tale about tomatoes from history, and this one involves George Washington. It is said that his personal cook, angered by Washington's treason against Britain, decided to exact his own revenge. One day, when Washington was suffering from a head cold and a subsequent loss of taste and smell, the cook saw his opportunity. He cooked a stew meant solely for the general and included a seemingly lethal dose of what he called the scarlet-fleshed fruit. He was sure that this would be enough to poison and kill Washington, but the next day, when, contrary to expectation, the general was in fact feeling in better health and good spirits, the cook surmised that the only explanation was the famous leader was protected by God himself. In his shame, and possibly for fear of anyone finding him out, he wrote a final farewell note which read, "As a cook, I have a prejudice against dying by poison. I am too corpulent to hang, but by reason of my calling, I am an expert with a carving knife." It seems that we will always view tomatoes with suspicion in certain parts of the world, but for the most part, we now get to enjoy them guilt-free in salads, on pizzas and in pastas, and only very seldomly do any of us accidentally turn into werewolves. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Fantastic History of Food. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on Twitter at Food History Pod, as well as checking out our Facebook page. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd really appreciate you taking a moment to rate the show on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen on, and if you can, leave a review as well. I also have a Patreon account where you can support the show and get access to exclusive content, bonus episodes, and even the chance to choose the topic for an upcoming episode. But all of this is only for our Patreon subscribers. Everyone who donates or subscribes will also get a personal shout out from me on an upcoming episode. Check out our website where you can find transcripts, show notes, and references for each and every episode at foodhistorypodcast.com.